Welcome back to the November Learning Podcast Series with Richard Halcott and Alan November. Richard is the Director of Strategy, Research, and Global Education for Cisco Systems. Richard presented at our 2010 Building Learning Communities Conference. If you wish to find out more about the conference, visit novemberlearning.com/BLC. This podcast is part 5 of a 6-part series. In this podcast, Richard Halcott shares examples of schools that are implementing a 21st century curriculum. Richard discusses the curricular changes, leadership, and assessment ideas that are being put into practice. Richard also relates how some schools are incorporating informal learning in the educational process. If you have not listened to this series, informal learning was discussed in part 2 of this podcast series. Special thanks to Richard Halcott and Cisco Systems for their help in making this podcast series possible.
Around the world of leading edge practice. One I wanted to pull out was the New York City iSchool, which is where we're working closely with the school leadership and in partnership with the Department of Education across New York City to pioneer a really new way of thinking about learning. This is a non-selective school that is based in part of an existing high school. It focuses on interdisciplinary problem-based modules, self-paced individualized online coursework, a real focus on college preparation, the sort of core experiences required for that, off-site fieldwork, and then crucially, the integration of 21st century skills into all aspects of high school life, particular focus on leadership, collaboration, interdisciplinary problem solving, and personal accountability. And embedded across all of that is technology, which enables all of this. But if you go into this school, it doesn't feel like a normal school because it's got very visionary leadership, it's got sort of exciting, sort of very motivated students, it's got these unusual spaces and this different curriculum. But, you know, it's not sort of glowing and made of stainless steel and, you know, brightly lit and, you know, halogen and, you know, massive sort of TFT flat screen plasmas everywhere. It's not like that. It uses technology in a real way, in a way that's embedded into real learning, rather than actually treating it as this sort of perfect sort of school on a hill where everything can be sort of exactly right. So it's a very impressive example of what I call kind of real technology helping real education, as opposed to this idea of, you know, rebuilding, restarting again, and off we go. And the principle there is that we're going to take that, and now the iSchool is at the center of the iZone, and the idea is to take those lessons that have been learned there, the leadership that's been deployed there, and actually extend that to many more schools across New York City. And then, of course, the lessons that have been learned there about the broader process of innovation and embedding that, and actually extend that across the whole city as and when that's possible. But across the world, we're seeing lots of other opportunities too. We've seen partnerships for people who are wanting to deliver authentic learning. And one of the best examples we came across, although we commissioned an independent research organization called Future Lab in the UK to help us with this, one of the ones they came up with was actually the Cisco Networking Academy, which at any one time has around 900,000 students engaged with it around the world. And since its creation has graduated around 3.2 million students around the world. It's one of the largest informal learning or non-formal learning, even though it's based in schools, education programs of its type. But in Indonesia, the one that they pulled out was the Industry Attachment Program, which linked Networking Academy graduates to companies requiring strategic ICT advice. So it helped the companies and therefore linked students to those job opportunities and helped economic development, but it also made the learning very authentic for the students and gave real meaning to it. And we've seen great results there, both in terms of motivation and, of course, the integration with the community and their commitment to the overall program. We're increasingly seeing the take-up of gaming technologies. This is very, very interesting to most educators, and it's not surprising. Neuroscience has shown that risk-taking stimulates parts of the brain that encourage motivation and learning. And we're seeing that students are more inclined to take risks in virtual environments, which makes sense. It's also more unusual, and a wider variety of learning experiences are available in virtualized environments because, of course, the environments can be entirely simulated and maybe equipment can be simulated and, you know, different experiences can be available to students who might not have those near home or near to school. The area we've seen taken this further is furthest is Scotland, which has pioneered an entirely games-based curriculum through its Consularium initiative. And it's seen, even in these early stages, positive effects on student achievement, engagement, motivation, and attendance. And what they've done is they've used a whole variety from, you know, Guitar Hero, but also through, you know, the Nintendo Wii and various sort of devices, just using the kind of technologies that students find inherently engaging and that require cognitive abilities to use them and integrating those in day-to-day curriculum. What we've also seen is that technology, and this is perhaps its greatest benefit, can help blend together a more sophisticated learning mix. So the point is that technology, particularly connectivity and student record systems, etc., can really help integrate learning that takes place outside traditional classrooms with the classroom learning itself. So we've seen examples of this in the UK. There's the National Museum's online learning project, where what they've done is they've linked gallery exhibitions to areas of the national curriculum in the UK so that they can actually be very effectively linked by schools that are close to those institutions into their, you know, so field trips aren't sort of one-off, they're actually integrated with the learning that students are meant to be undertaking. But we're also seeing that it's being very effective, and again, an example from the UK, which was picked up by Future Lab, which is called Not School, which is using blended learning for both online and offline to draw disengaged learners, people who are excluded from school through bad behavior or other problems, and achieving a 98% success rate in reintroducing them into formal learning. So this blending the more sophisticated learning mix, using technology as one part, but potentially a very engaging part, a part that can engage people who otherwise maybe are turned off by more traditional methods, and then bring it in. So it's not technology-based learning, but it could be enabled, or part of the curriculum could be enabled as well. But it's another very powerful weapon in the teacher's arsenal. We're also seeing richer assessments and evaluations, and potentially this is one of the greatest benefits of technology. It's the fact that, you know, we can gather more and more data on how students actually learn through the way in which they interact with online learning environments. How much time are they spending on a particular problem? Are they making the same series of mistakes all of the time? Are they guessing at particular choices? All of those things come through in a way that when students at the end of a day would, you know, or at the end of an exam would hand in a paper, that's just a static piece of information. Whereas if you can have very rich formative and summative assessments and evaluations, then, and maybe complemented by e-portfolios that students themselves put together, then maybe that gives much greater insight, not only at a more rounded assessment of student performance, but also helping teachers shape interventions and make them better and better and better. And we've worked over recent months with Dell and with Microsoft and the University of Melbourne and the OECD to launch ATC21S, which is a global effort to develop new tests and standards for 21st century skills. That's about halfway through now. It's involving an internationally renowned group of academics who actually deploy best practice to sort of say, how could we assess those skills that we talked about for 21st century skills? Because we all know that we do need to assess, and if we don't assess, then we don't assess the right ones, then people will keep teaching to the old test. And finally, we're seeing Denmark pioneering the use of computers in examinations themselves, meaning that students have all the knowledge they need at their fingertips. It's all about their ability to answer questions, to the ability to kind of reassemble that knowledge, to actually apply it rather than just actually knowing it, because it's all there at their fingertips. And then finally, data at all levels, so linked to assessment and evaluation, but using student response systems, involving parents and policymakers. And we're seeing this that, you know, there are a lot of systems that have experimented with very large-scale deployments of data and assessment systems. But internationally, we're seeing the OECD PISA tests really influence government policy major investments. And, you know, that's good because it helps focus at the broadest level the, you know, investments and effort on the areas that can make the greatest difference. But we really are only scratching the surface, because we should be able to do sort of similar things on a school-by-school and certainly district-by-district basis and work out what works best for which people, which students, and when.